cuts in on the right foot, launches a golazo!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer, and brought to you in part by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live on 92.9 The Game. You got me for 2 hours tonight. I'm Jason Longshore. We got a lot to talk about. 4 days until USA Paraguay. Thursday, the World Cup kicks off in Mexico City with El Tri against South Africa. So many different things. We've got a bunch of games to talk about from the weekend. We will get a lot into the US and Germany starting here in the first segment. But there's a lot of other news as well. You've got some injuries, some teams that are going to be scrambling a little bit. Lots of different things to get into as the tournament is days away. I hope you guys have figured out where you're going to be all over the metro Atlanta area for these games, because I feel like everybody is throwing a party. There are so many different, whether it is a tournament kickoff party on Thursday, whether it's a party for the U.S. match on Friday. All weekend long, the FIFA Fan Festival will be going, Decatur Watch Fest will be going, all the different events. You will have your choice. You can be in so many different places to consume this tournament. And I really recommend the communal experience. It's so exciting to watch a World Cup with strangers, honestly, with people from all over the world. And all of the different conversations that come out of that. It's just, it's an amazing event. We've never had one this large. We've never had a World Cup in our city. We've never had what we're about to experience. And for all of the talk about tickets and prices and here in Atlanta, construction and all the different things that are, look, an unfortunate part of the conversation in the buildup to an event like this. It happened back in 1996, by the way. This was very common conversation going into the 1996 Olympics. Is it gonna work? Is everything gonna be okay? Is it all gonna come off well? Yeah, it did. It was pretty amazing. This summer is gonna be pretty amazing. I'm really excited to get the actual matches underway and we can dig into those stories. All right, first segment, we're gonna dig into what we saw in Chicago yesterday, the US and Germany. A 2-1 win for Germany at Soldier Field. Record crowd, 63,000. Really exciting match. I thought the U.S. played well. I thought they were the better team, honestly, out of the 90 minutes. They conceded twice, and that is an issue, and they've conceded a lot as of late against good teams. That is a concern. Chris Richards, unable to play. That is a concern. Giving up a goal off a set piece in the way that you did in the second minute, that is a concern. The way you bounced back from giving up that goal, that gives you some positive momentum. That gives you, I think, a good feeling about this team. The way you played in the first half especially, I think, gives you a good feeling about this team. Positive momentum. The way the players defended Tim Weah when there was the attempt to start some nonsense from a few German players who didn't like actually just being tackled legally, but that's a whole other topic. I love that response. I like a lot of what we saw yesterday. I like a lot of what we got out of yesterday. Germany's the number 10 team in the world. The U.S. is the number 16 team in the world. I think in the moments that decided the result yesterday, you saw that gap. In the overall play, there wasn't a gap. The problem is when you go into the tournament now, being the better team over the 90 minutes earns you nothing. You have to deliver in the big moments inside the 18-yard box that you're attacking and inside the 18-yard box that you're defending. It has to be better than it was on that first set piece. And we said it yesterday from our pregame show from a Nofo Bruco up in Gainesville. And big shout out to the whole Nofo Bruco team. We had a weekend with them to launch our Soccer Down Here lager. It was really exciting seeing Atlanta United fans, talking Atlanta United, talking U.S. men's national team, talking just World Cup with people in both Cumming and in Gainesville all weekend long. People buying Soccer Down Here lager, which is amazing. I have it in my fridge. This is just the weirdest thing to have our own beer. It's very cool. But I said it on the pregame show yesterday here on 92.9 The Game. This was a big day for Miles Robinson. Huge day. Needed to have a big-time performance. He did not. He is at least partially at fault on goal number one. And one goal like that can eliminate you from this World Cup. Because I think it's going to be down to the thinnest of margins in this tournament in terms of who gets out of the group stage, where they finish in the group stage, who gets into the knockout rounds as a third-place team. One goal here and there could change your whole trajectory, could literally change the lives of these players in terms of what they have coming up or booking a plane ticket home. So that mistake, with everything on the line, it just can't happen. And it magnifies why you need Chris Richards in this team. The next few days are going to be very, very important for the U.S. men's national team training staff as they try to get Chris Richards ready. Ankle sprain. It was a very bad one with Crystal Palace late in the season. He did not play in their last match. He has been training lately, but he has not featured in either of the two friendlies. You have up until 24 hours from the opening match to make a change to your roster. Now, I've said this multiple times over the last few days, and I do think it's a very important point. Mauricio Pochettino did not bring anyone else in. There were no other center backs who came into camp. We've seen teams do this. Argentina has a few extra players in camp. Other teams do as well because they have injury concerns. And just in case somebody's already there, they're already in sync, they're already up to speed with everything you're doing to prepare for this tournament. The U.S. hasn't done that. That makes me think that they have very high hopes that Chris Richards will be able to play a significant role in this tournament. I think he's vital, and I think if he can play in games two and three in the group stage, but maybe not game one, you bring him anyway. But if he can't play until game three of the group stage at all, if he cannot contribute, you worry about bringing him. Now, I don't know if they brought another center back, if that would change how you feel about this team defensively. You don't want to be shorthanded, but I don't know if that would upgrade you right now in terms of your thoughts. I don't think that it would. There's not another Chris Richards that's not on this roster. That just doesn't exist right now. He is your best center back. I think more than anything, we're also seeing the need to play three center backs and Alex Freeman as that hybrid center back, that right-sided center back that can be a right back when the formation shifts to four, but generally playing out of a 3-4-2-1. I think that three center back setup is essential because I think with Chris Richards not 100%, even if he gets back on the field, Tim Ream becomes even more important for his leadership, for his communication, for his organization, for his ability to build the play out of the back. He's got to be on the field. And I don't think you can have him on the field and play in a four-man back line because of the pace issue at 38 years old. So you got to cover for him. You got to cover probably a little bit for Chris Richards, even if he gets back into the team coming off of an ankle injury. You need the extra defender. Alex Freeman has done everything you could have asked for in these friendlies so far. He's earned the spot. Tim Ream has earned the spot. Your wing backs, you feel good. Really good after Anthony Robinson's goal yesterday. Extremely good after that goal. You feel really good about Sergiño Dest after his goal in game one. You like this group in terms of the back 3/5. Tyler Adams, no problems. Christian Pulisic, no problems. He's playing really well. Valerian Balogun, I think, is your number 9. No problems. Weston McKennie is in your starting lineup. No problems. Malik Tillman, I think, is going to be in your starting midfield as well. And we saw the ability for McKennie and Tillman to be a little interchangeable. I really like that. That four-man midfield with Adams, Tillman, McKennie, Pulisic, feel great about it. It's the center back spot. If it's not Chris Richards in game one, I think Mark McKenzie looked better in his play in the Senegal match. I think he has the inside track to be the starter in that group if it's not Chris Richards. I think Chris Richards being able to play Friday night is going to be a real gigantic ask, and I would say that it's extremely unlikely. But if he can factor into game two and game three and beyond, he's going to be on your roster. I think the only way you replace him on the roster is if he is not going to be able to play at all until game three. Then you start to have to worry a little bit, because if you have an injury to one of your center backs, then you're really thin at that position, and that's a problem. The U.S. is not the only team in this position in this tournament. There are quite a few teams that are, one, already making injury replacements on their rosters. Some are waiting to the last minute to do it. Canada is dealing with this at center back with Moise Bombito. Argentina have had to go more than likely to another center back to bring in because of their injury issues. It's just the nature of a World Cup. You get guys that get hurt late in the season, and you cross your fingers and you hope they're able to get to the World Cup and participate. Chris Richards is one of the most important players in the tournament who is facing this issue because of how important he is to the U.S. I think the issues that Miles Robinson has had in the two friendlies leading up to the World Cup magnify how important Chris Richards is. I really hoped that Miles could play well yesterday and kind of lock that down. I don't think he helped himself, unfortunately. He will be on the roster. He will potentially be needed during this tournament, and I hope that he can keep his head up and find ways to contribute to this group. But I don't know if you can trust him to start with where things stand right now and what we've seen in these friendlies. Chris Richards, whatever it takes to get you ready, that's what this training staff is going to be doing over these next couple of days before they have to make a decision on Thursday night about the potential for roster changes. All right, coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight, we're going to come back to the U.S. and Germany. We'll dig deeper into it. I've got some audio for you from the Mix Zone, thanks to our own Madison Cruz, who was at Soldier Field yesterday. You'll hear a little bit from Tyler Adams, from Anthony Robinson, from Christian Pulisic. But coming up next, let's bounce around the world and get caught up on some of the news going on around the World Cup. Some on-field, some off-field. Let's get caught up as we are less than a week away from the start of the 2026 FIFA World Cup. All that's coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Into the back of the net! Goal!
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight
with Jason Longshore.
Welcome back. Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. We got tons to dig into. 2 hours on the radio tonight. Tomorrow, I'll be back with you at 10 on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Friday. If you're looking for a spot to watch the U.S. match, you can come catch the pregame with us at Mazzy's in Duluth from 6 to 8 p.m. I'll be on the air. Dukes and Bell will be there before that. Chris Thomas will be there during the match. All the things. And then next weekend, 2 9-11 shows. Every night, Atlanta Soccer Tonight through the World Cup final, with one exception, will be in Nashville calling an Atlanta United match. So I'll be on the radio that night too. So I'm calling it 50 straight days, including the U.S. friendly against Senegal, where we did an impromptu AST takeover on the Abe TL show. 50 straight days. So far, voice is holding up. So far, so good. Long way to go. Let's talk about some of the results that we've had here lately in these international friendlies. We're going to go to Kyle Field in College Station, Texas. No, we're not talking SEC or the old Southwestern Conference or any of that. We're talking Argentina and Honduras. And we've had a few mistakes in some of the venues. We've had a few things happen that have gotten the international press talking, that have given them some fuel to question how this tournament is going to come off. The Argentine anthem was supposed to follow the Honduran anthem. The Honduran anthem was played. Everything was fine. Both teams are out on the field. And then the Argentine anthem did not play. Instead, a song called El Bombón Asesino, which is the killer bombshell. And it was from the cover of the song by Los Palmeras, which is a great group, by the way. If you have not ever heard of Los Palmeras, I highly recommend it. Cumbia group from Santa Fe in Argentina. And the videos that have come out first, Argentine TikTok and Instagram have gone nuts with this, with all kinds of memes already happening. Argentine TikTok is out of control. But you saw the look on Messi's face and other players' faces, like, what? Because that's a song that gets played in stadiums. That's a song that, you know, parts of it are sung in the stands. It was part of the greatest pregame performance ever in a Copa Sudamericana final, where Los Palmeiras played with the local team from Santa Fe, Colón, in their first ever CONMEBOL final. And people were crying in the stands when that song hit. So they at least picked a good song for the Argentine players to get excited about, but it was not the national anthem. So that was a little bit of an issue. Argentina were able to shake it off. Lionel Messi watched from the bench. He did not play. That was more than likely going to be the plan. He's been training. He's been doing well. Staff has not taken any risks with that hamstring ahead of the June 16th opener against Algeria. But the defending world champions, they controlled this game comfortably, as they should, against Honduras. Lautaro Martinez converted a penalty in the first half. Nicolas Tagliafico drew the penalty. Giuliano Simeone, the son of El Cholo, Diego Simeone, the manager of Atletico Madrid, he doubled the lead early in the second half. Really nice goal there. There are some other issues for this Argentine team right now. Goalkeeper Emiliano Martinez, he is coming back with a fractured finger. He said he will be there for game one. Don't worry about it. That's what he's told fans. That's what he's told media. There are some other players that you are a little worried about. Julian Alvarez, Leandro Paredes, they were absent from open training sessions earlier in the week in Kansas City. Nico Paz trying to get back. Sounds like it's trending in the right direction. Gonzalo Montiel, Nahuel Molina also working separately. A lot of issues at the moment with Argentina in possible injuries, and I don't know how Lionel Scaloni is going to manage it, except cross your fingers and hope. They will be in action, another SEC venue. And I'd love to know how Argentina settled on College Station, Texas and Auburn, Alabama for their pre-tournament friendlies. But here we are. Iceland is the opponent in Jordan Air Stadium at Auburn, Alabama for the defending World Cup champions of Argentina. One thing to keep in mind, no nation has successfully defended the World Cup since Brazil in 1962. Also to keep in mind, especially with the new FIFA rankings coming out last week, no team has ever gone into the World Cup ranked number one in the FIFA rankings since they started about 30 plus years ago. No team has ever gone in number one and won. France was number one until last week. Now it's Argentina. They're a little superstitious down there. They might be wanting to play El Bombón Asesino before every game now because they're superstitious. We'll find out. Brazil, they won 2-1 over Egypt in Cleveland, a little bit more traditional venue for a big international match. Bruno Guimarães, he put Brazil ahead in the 7th minute, capitalized on a defensive error from Egypt. The Egyptians equalized. Marquinhos gave the ball away, and Mohamed Zico equalized 3 minutes after that. Second half, Endrick. And Endrick is a key player to watch in this tournament, in my opinion. He is a Real Madrid player, couldn't break through there, wasn't getting time, went on loan to Lyon in Ligue 1 and lit the league on fire. His confidence has blossomed again after going to Real Madrid and really kind of questioning himself and struggling with the substitute appearances that he was getting. If Endrick comes into this tournament on fire, Rafinha with the assist on this one, he becomes one of the key young players to watch. He's still a teenager. We think about him going to Madrid so young, and you think he's been around a long time. He hasn't. He comes into the tournament in good form. He gets this goal big time. Carlo Ancelotti said after the game he already knows his starting 11 against Morocco. The combination of Rafinha's assist there, the midfield solidity with Guimarães, Marquinhos in the back, even though, yeah, he made a mistake, and Endrick either starting or off the bench, really, really good. Morocco, they have some injury concerns after today. They drew 1-1 with Norway, and problems for them in terms of injuries coming out of it. Ezzelzouli for Morocco, he was forced off at halftime. Not sure about him. Nassar Mazraoui, he came off in the 29th minute with a knock. That's not good. Two very important players for Morocco are now big-time injury questions, and they get Brazil in the opener on June 13th. England, they're one of the favorites. Not convincing. They beat New Zealand, who is frankly not very good, 1-0 in Tampa at Raymond James Stadium. This was the source of the other meme-worthy material where the big stadium board had a lineup for England on the board that did not make really any sense whatsoever. I don't know how this was created. If it was AI, man, you really need to get a new platform because it was bad. I'm trying to pull it up now because none of it made sense. Jordan Pickford, okay. Number 9 was just Harry. I guess he's become Brazilian now. Number 16 was just Cobby, so I guess he's also Brazilian. Number 19 was Ollie Kane. Okay. Number 25 was Jed Bellingham. Okay. 26 was Jarrell Rashford. Okay. 11 was Marcus Stones. These are not real players. I don't know how this happened, who did it, why they did it, how they didn't fix it, how somebody didn't see it and say, that's horribly incorrect. Like, not even like one name misspelled or slightly off or a number being wrong. No. You don't have full names for some people, and you have completely and utterly incorrect names for others. I mean, there was a Jed on the field, DJED, and he had the assist, Jed Spence. He crossed it in for Harry Kane with the header. That's the only goal. England wins 1-0. Thomas Tuchel changed the entire team at halftime, used 22 players. Not great, though. The XG was good, 1.5 in the first half, and New Zealand 0.12, but again, New Zealand's not very good. England lost to Japan 1-0 in March. They drew with Uruguay in March. This win was against the lowest ranked team in the tournament, and it wasn't convincing. Now, Tuchel has won 10 of his 13 matches in charge, which is very good. England will face Croatia, their most difficult group stage opponent, in game one. Then they get Ghana, who has been a bit of a mess in the pre-tournament buildup, and Panama, who is tricky. I think Panama's a tricky team. I think Panama could get to the knockout rounds. I feel pretty good about saying that. England's ceiling, because of their talent, is extremely high, but they haven't looked like that team in a while. Going back to the end of last year, in the November window, in the October window, in the September window, lately, it hasn't looked all that great. And you don't have Cole Palmer. You don't have Phil Foden. England has a lot of questions about them. France has a lot of questions about them after the loss to Cote d'Ivoire in their send-off match. Argentina has a lot of questions about them with all the injuries that they're dealing with. Spain has a big question about them with Lamine Yamal out and a draw with Iraq in their send-off game. So those are your four favorites. France, Spain, England, Argentina. None of them look like a stone-cold favorite right now. That's interesting, coming into a tournament that I felt like for a long time had a very small number of teams that could say, we can actually win this thing. Now, it feels a little more open. Portugal is part of that next conversation. They had a 2-1 win over Chile. Rafael Leao was sent off in that match. Got a little feisty. Cristiano Ronaldo had a bad miss on a header. I worry with Portugal about how they manage Cristiano Ronaldo and maybe how they manage his ego at times, because that was an issue in the last World Cup where they looked better without him on the field, but he didn't really accept that very well. That's a potential problem for Roberto Martinez and Portugal. We'll see how they handle that. You start to look at the next tier. The Netherlands lost at home to Algeria. Colombia, good, decent win tonight over Jordan in an international friendly in San Diego. Luis Diaz has been in great form, but Colombia didn't look great in the March window. Nobody comes into this tournament where you're just like, wow. Nobody of those massive favorites. Now, there's still going to be some games between now and the kickoff of this tournament. That could change. We could be having a different conversation before we get to Thursday at 3:00 when Mexico and South Africa kick off. That could happen. But right now, man, I got a lot of questions. And honestly, I think that's a good thing because that makes this tournament even more interesting to me. I was a little, not down, but I was a little like, all right, if it's one of four teams, one of the four top seeds are the only ones who really feel comfortable winning this or picking them to win it. Like, where's the excitement? Where's the fun going to be? Well, the fun might be because it's wide open. And I think the fun could be because you're going to have a lot of late goals that decide games. One other result from the weekend that we need to touch on is Scotland at Sports Illustrated Stadium in Harrison, New Jersey, the home of the New York Red Bulls. Scotland with a 4-0 win over Bolivia. Scotland is trying to make the group stage for the first, or trying to get out of the group stage for the first time ever. And it's crazy to think about a nation that has been at the heart of the earliest days of the sport and a nation that has been at the heart of developing this sport and adding, I think, tactical wrinkles to it. It was the Scots who were first known for the short passing game. I hope this Scotland team can look more like this, and I hope they can look exciting because I think they have the talent. I have not been the biggest fan of Steve Clark's tenure. It could potentially extend past this, but he's got attacking talent. He can have this team set up to play. Andy Robertson getting forward. Scott McTominay is one of the best players in the world. Che Adams and Lauren Shankland as the two strikers, maybe playing together. Really, again, great performance. Four goals in the first half. Scotland didn't even really have to play the second half. They did. Nothing else happened. Bolivia, probably still a little heartbroken about getting so close to coming back to the World Cup for the first time since 94 and failing in the playoffs. They had nothing to play for. Very easy for them to get broken by early goals in this. And a goal in the fifth minute, that can break a team that has nothing to play for. But can this Scotland team, can they be a handful? They're in the group with Brazil, with Morocco, with Haiti. They'll open against Haiti in Boston on June 18th. That could be one of these sneaky games. And that's the thing about this tournament that we're going to be talking about all the way through, especially in these early group stage games. You're going to have a game like Scotland and Haiti. And you look at that on paper and there's no history between the two teams. They play very different styles. There's nothing historically to say like, oh, that's going to be a great game. But in that group and in really just about every group in this tournament, you've got two teams that feel pretty comfortable about getting out of the group. Brazil and Morocco should get out of the group. They shouldn't stress it. Scotland and Haiti, if there's a winner in that match and they avoid getting blown out in one of the other two games, now that might be hard against Brazil and Morocco, but we'll see. If they can avoid getting blown out and they win that game, game one, I think they get out of the group. 8 of 12 third place teams get out of the group. And I think if you avoid a blowout in your losses, you'll get out of the group with one win, 3 points. Scotland-Haiti could essentially be a knockout game in game one on June 18th in Boston. So much more to get to. More World Cup updates, more World Cup news. We'll talk about some of the injuries that are affecting teams and other things to keep in mind as we get closer and closer to the kickoff of the 2026 World Cup on Thursday. More Atlanta soccer tonight on the other side of the break on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Soccer on the world stage, and Jason Longshore has it all covered
with Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. You've got me for one more hour after this segment, getting you ready for the World Cup AST every night during the tournament. You can always catch it multiple ways. You can always get the whole show as a podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to Off the Woodwork on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And you'll get all the shows. You'll get all the other soccer segments on the station. There's going to be a lot of those throughout the summer. You can catch the show on YouTube. Almost every show will be in its entirety on YouTube. There are some times where location makes that a little difficult. Like yesterday was one, for example. Sometimes you will get part of the show on YouTube. Sometimes you will get bonus content on YouTube, especially when we get the 10 o'clock start during the week. We will sign off on radio at 11. We'll continue on YouTube and we'll take some questions and really wherever you want to go. We've had some fun conversations over the past week about what to look for with Atlanta United this summer, because there will be news, there will be rumor, there will be innuendo. We'll talk about that throughout the summer because things will pop up. you're going to have signings happen. You're going to have rumors about signings happen. But lots of questions about the U.S. men's national team, all kinds of stuff. We've all been sharing, and I've been talking to folks about this offline too. We've all been getting into the Panini sticker albums. And this was a World Cup tradition that I had never really gotten super into before. I knew it existed. It's been going on for, I think, 50 years. But it wasn't something that I did because, for whatever reason, I grew up collecting baseball cards. So the idea of collecting stickers to complete a sticker album, like it wasn't as exciting for me. But this is the last tournament that Panini will do this. It's also the largest because there's 48 teams in terms of actually trying to complete this album. And everybody kind of got into it. People that I know who never got into it have gotten into this. Like my group chat is sharing like open in packs on a regular basis. And I still can't get a Lionel Messi sticker. Or many U.S. players, for that matter. And I'm not the only one who's having that issue. We're going to go deep dive at some point this week on the Stoppage Time YouTube portion of the show on Panini stickers. And I think we're going to organize a swap meet for stickers because everybody's starting to get doubles. Everybody's looking for some sticker to complete some team. We might have to make this happen at some point and have a watch party / sticker swap at one of these venues that's going to be showing World Cup, which is pretty much everybody. We'll be doing that at some point this summer. Just stay tuned. Make sure you're following me at Long Shoe. Make sure you're following Soccer Down Here as well. Make sure you're following 92.9 The Game on social media because we're all working together all summer long. All right, let's get caught up on some other news from around the tournament. And we'll go to the Netherlands first. Ronald Koeman in New York, so not technically in the Netherlands. They lost their last game in the Netherlands. Ronald Koeman had been asking the media to take it easy on this team, to show a little positivity. Then they went and lost, and that went out the window. They're playing Uzbekistan. Atlanta's Uzbekistan. The White Wolves of Uzbekistan, who will be training at the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta training ground in Marietta, the home of Atlanta United. They'll be heading there after this game on Monday at Icon Stadium on Randall's Island, if I'm not mistaken. Now, Ronald Koeman said that the match will serve as a true dress rehearsal for his starting 11. His plan is to play the first choice lineup with as few changes as possible through the match. Then the players who don't play have a second unofficial game straight afterwards, like training, basically like a scrimmage, 2 35-minute halves, because he wants every player in the squad to get minutes before the tournament opens. He said, we want to use the first match to make as few changes as possible. We're going to play the first match largely with our starting team. It's also good for guys who are not 100% fit who can then play in the second match. That's why we're playing two matches. The Dutch will play Japan in their opener. That's a really tough game. I'd like this Japan team coming into the World Cup. That'll be June 14th in Dallas. The Netherlands lost 1-0 to Algeria in their final friendly in the Netherlands. Now, in that game, Ronald Koeman replaced his entire team, including Virgil van Dijk, Van de Ven, the two center backs, replaced them at halftime. The result raised a ton of questions. Tomorrow, he wants to answer some of those questions. We will see. Number two, Julian Nagelsmann. He answered some questions after Germany's 2-1 win over the U.S. in Chicago yesterday and gave some encouraging words on the fitness of two of his top players. Jamal Musiala said he's getting better and better. Florian Wirtz feels like he's at the peak of his form, even though he dealt with injury and fitness issues at Liverpool in the recent weeks at the end of the season. Feel like he's been in good form right now, and Nagelsmann described both of them as extremely important. Germany comes into the tournament opening against Curaçao, their easiest game in the group stage. Sorry, Andrew Jones, I apologize. You get that, and then you get Ecuador, and then you get Cote d'Ivoire in Group E. So the group is fascinating. I think Curaçao is actually a pretty good team, but that's a brutal group for them. Wirtz and Musiala both trending upward is a big step for Germany. I in terms of Germany and what we saw out of them, and we'll talk a little bit more on the U.S. men's national team side in the next segment, I thought Germany was fine. I didn't think they were great. They were more ruthless, more clinical in the moments they needed to be, and that's why they get the win. But one goal's from a set piece, kind of out of thin air at the beginning of the match. The other one is good play where you had been in control for a bit. But out of the 60 minutes that you saw the starters for both teams play the majority of, I thought the U.S. was better. Germany was good. But Germany is typically also a team that comes into a tournament and builds. You don't want to be your best right now. You want to be your best, hopefully, on July 19th in the World Cup final. You want to grow as the tournament goes on. So for Germany, you're not worried about that. For the U.S., you do have room to grow. Got to get a little bit cleaner defensively, and you've got to take advantage when you have good play like you did yesterday against a top team where you're going to have limited opportunities to take advantage. All right, let's go to France, because France has been really interesting as of late. I don't know how to feel about France, and the reason why I worry about the French at the moment is they have a history of this. If you have followed the World Cup for extended periods of time, there have been tournaments for France where they came in with heavy expectation and they did not in any way meet that. 2002, for example, they were coming off of a World Cup win in 1998 at home, and they lost the opening match to the debutants of that tournament, Senegal. 2010, go watch The Bus on Netflix and you will see a team in complete and utter disarray with a coach who was utterly clueless and caused a lot of that disarray. And some players who didn't maybe necessarily cover themselves in glory, but that was a very dysfunctional team to the point that they had an open training session in South Africa during the tournament and the players did not train. And it was a very bad look. And it was a national scandal. I don't think we're in that kind of stage here with France. But again, because they have a track record for having these sorts of issues before the tournament. Didier Deschamps, the manager, his last tournament. He is stepping down at the end of the tournament. A lot of reports have Zinedine Zidane taking over. Deschamps spoke to journalists today, kind of laid out his tactical vision for how he wants this French attack to work. He wants them to be fluid. He wants them to interchange. He wants rotation between the group. Michael Olise, he's used to playing wide right for Bayern, but he can come inside too. Ryan Cherki, he can play on either side. He can play central. I think he's best central. You want him central. Ousmane Dembele, he can play wide. He can start as the nine. He can drift around. Kylian Mbappe, now he's the interesting one for a lot of reasons. He's one of the most talented players in the world. No question about that. He also reportedly left the training session yesterday early due to some kind of discomfort. There have not been any follow-ups that I have seen about that. So you have to take almost everything that happens right now with a grain of salt, unless it is coming from your top tier sources. But you also have to pay attention to what everybody else is saying too, because we've seen this already happen with some things that got whispered about, got kind of things bubbled up, and then it got clarified later. So keep an eye on Kylian Mbappe's health, but let's talk about another aspect of things with Kylian Mbappe. All right. Olise, Cherki, Dembele. Dembele, a beast in the press. Olise, absolutely. He gets it. Cherki, not so much, but he can do it. Kylian Mbappe, no interest. None. Doesn't want to do it. He runs very little when he doesn't have the ball. When he has the ball, monster. When he doesn't, passenger. And that can be a problem. It might not be a problem if Dembele, Olise, Cherki, whoever else is in the attack for France on a given day, commits to running a little extra, commits to covering for Mbappe and keeping him free to do the thing that he does, which is score goals. He could, by the end of this tournament, be the all-time leading goal scorer in World Cup history. He could. He's 5 goals off of that. Now, Lionel Messi is 4 goals off of that. Miroslav Klose holds that record right now. But Kylian Mbappe is 27 years old. He has at least one more World Cup in him after this, probably two. He will be the all-time leading World Cup goal scorer when his career is done. I feel very confident in saying that. He's won a World Cup in 2018. again, at a very young age, he was 20 then, but he's got a World Cup winner's medal. He hasn't won much in a while. And when he left PSG, they got better. And he went to Real Madrid and they got worse. And that's not a good sign when you're a player of his quality and all the other things that just seem to come up. There were a lot of reports in the Madrid media late in the season where he was dealing with an injury, and he dealt with an injury a lot this season, which maybe, again, you start to think about track record and you hear about him leaving training session early and you're like, oh boy, here we go again with one of his two knees. Because there were also reports that Real Madrid's doctors looked at the wrong knee, which is crazy because you would think the player would say, no, not that one, the other one. I don't know. But there were also reports out of Madrid that Mbappe wasn't exactly embraced by his teammates. And there were people who were upset about him not being at El Clasico and the buildup to that, being on vacation while he was recovering from injury. There were possible subtweets and posts that were referencing it from players without saying it specifically. There's a lot of soap opera antics. A lot. This is a great player, but there's a lot of noise. And it's not a good thing for this French team, who historically has not dealt with noise all that well and have been fully capable of making a lot of noise themselves. It's a weird situation. Let's add another weird element to this. Reportedly, Mbappe and his teammates have been clashing with the Federation, the French Federation, which, again, go watch The Bus on Netflix from the 2010 World Cup, because they clashed with the Federation a lot. The French national team have discussed bonuses and match tickets with the Federation president, Philippe Diallo. The match tickets portion of it has caused more tension, according to L'Équipe this week. One issue is the financial compensation. French players will get performance-based bonuses depending on how far they advance. The Federation asked the players in March to accept a reduction in the bonuses due to the much higher than expected costs of the World Cup, the travel, the hotels, that sort of stuff. This has been an issue. This was an issue before the team leaves. They are headed to the United States on June 10th. Okay, that feels like maybe they got through that. There had been some discussion of withholding the payments before the semifinals to increase the total amount. Okay, I don't know. That's pretty bold, assuming you get to the semifinals, which they should, but, you know, things happen. The one that seems to be the bigger issue is getting tickets. So Diallo, the French Federation president, proposed offering two tickets per player and allowing each player to purchase a maximum of six. I know that's kind of the same situation with the U.S. They get a certain amount, and I don't know how many it is, and they can buy more if they choose. And I don't know how much they can. I don't know the numbers for the U.S., but that idea of getting an allotment and then being able to buy more, that's similar to what the U.S. is dealing with. The players want more tickets. So good luck, France. You're getting into all kinds of silliness, and this team is too good for all the silliness. And look, here's the thing. They play Senegal in the opener. And Senegal beat them in 2002, and there is a lot of history, and maybe this is something for a stoppage time later this tournament, before we get into the games, of dealing with Senegal and France and history. But Senegal, they're not using this as fuel playing France in this game. They say they're one of the best teams in the world. Kalidou Koulibaly, who is a great defender for Senegal, he said, "We're not going to summarize the whole tournament to this one match. It is just the opener. But all that history is real. It's going to be a wild ride this summer." All right, coming up next, we will talk about the U.S. men's national team and their 2-1 loss to Germany, what we can take away from it, what we still have questions about, and what to expect on Friday night in Los Angeles when they take on Miguel Almiron and Paraguay. That's coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Now back to our look at the world of soccer.
And Jason Longshore has it all covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back. Hour number two Atlanta Soccer Tonight, getting you ready for the World Cup, which starts on Thursday, 3 o'clock, Mexico and South Africa at the Estadio Azteca. I guess Mexico City Stadium, or it could be the Estadio Azteca, because that's not a sponsor name. It won't be the Estadio Banorte, which is the official name of the stadium now. So I don't really know what to call it. I'm going to call it the Estadio Azteca until I get yelled at. How about that? It's an amazing stadium. It has hosted two World Cup finals. It is going to be the first stadium in the world to host three different World Cups in it, which is pretty wild. Huge renovation project just completed for the Estadio Azteca, and it will be roaring. Mexico comes into that game in great form after a 5-1 win over Serbia. Huge performance from Mexico in the second half. The offense got going, which was a big question about this team. They're going to have great fan support. It will be special on Wednesday. Now, remember, that's a rematch. We talked about France-Senegal in the last segment from 2002. Mexico-South Africa is a rematch of the opening game from the 2010 World Cup, with South Africa winning that one with Shabalala scoring the goal, a name that is very well known in Mexican soccer circles, who got that historic winner for South Africa. All right, let's talk about the U.S., because I do think they come into this tournament with momentum. It's not quite the same as Mexico, but it is momentum after a win over Senegal and a loss to Germany. Now, one reason why you get this momentum is the goal from Anthony Robinson. I was watching the first half of the match yesterday up at Nofo Bruco in Gainesville, where we did our pregame show here on the station. And I was watching the match with some listeners, and when Robinson hit that ball and you saw it come off his boot, I made a noise that I'm sure some of you listen to Atlanta United games have heard before, where you hear Mike Conte start to get going and I'm yelling over him in the background. God, I don't think I can yell over Mike, actually. That's probably not possible. Yelling underneath Mike is maybe the better way to put it. Yelling alongside, yelling at a lower volume. Couldn't quite match Mike's volume. I was pretty loud on this one because that's one of the best goals in U.S. soccer history. It's that good of a goal. Like, it doesn't have the meaning because it's in a friendly, but and it's ultimately a goal and a loss. But that goal, unbelievable. I mean, it is as well struck as you could possibly strike it. Our own Madison Cruz was there at Soldier Field. She captured some audio from the mixed zone after the game with players, and I wanted to share some of that with you. Here is Alex Freeman speaking to the assembled media.
Can you tell us the reaction you had to Jedi School?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, it was an amazing goal, and I feel like, you know, I didn't realize it went in. You know, the ball was so fast and going, and now it was just kind of, you know, seeing the quality he has and being able to, you know, see what he can do. And I think for all of us, it was something that, you know, it was amazing. And I think, you know, we look back and say, wow, you know, he did that.
What does a game like this teach you guys in terms of how you can compete with a European heavyweight, one of the top 10 teams in the world?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, for us, you know, it makes us realize that, you know, we're there, right? And I feel like for us, we're so good, you know, especially conceding so early, just reacting. And I feel like knowing that we have that kind of confidence and that kind of ambition to kind of come back and try to win the game as well. And for us, I think knowing that we have that in us, it's going to mean so much in the World Cup, you know, because those are going to be the times where, you know, you have to overcome situations like that. And knowing that, you know, we're able to battle, get chances, you know, throughout the whole game, have possession against a top team, you know, I feel like that's going to give us a lot of confidence going to the World Cup.
Alex Freeman, the youngest player on the U.S. national team roster. That was Atlanta's own Sandy McAfee on those questions as well. Freeman, I think, has been one of the big stories in these two games with being able to play as that right-sided center back in a three. He just gives Pochettino so many options tactically with this team. He's delivered. He is going to be a world star, in my opinion. He's that good. He's got that much going for him in the game. He played consistently towards the end of the season with Villarreal in La Liga after really gambling on himself, making the move from Orlando City, where he would have started every game and he was very comfortable. He took a gamble on going to Villarreal in the winter window, where he wasn't really like a known factor. I mean, it's a bold signing by Villarreal as well, because he hadn't played a whole lot for the national team at that point. He hadn't been in MLS for all that long. I thought Orlando City honestly could have called him up a year earlier than they did, but he played for Orlando City B for a long time. He made the bet. Villarreal made the bet. It took him a while to get going because he was coming off of his offseason and players were in midseason form in La Liga, but he earned playing time. And he comes into this extremely confident, and I think he's developed even further tactically from that time in La Liga. Alex Freeman is a must start for me. He is absolutely essential for this team. Let's hear from Christian Pulisic, who reacted to that goal from Jedi. Here's Christian Pulisic speaking to Sandy McAfee and the media in Chicago.
The Jedi's goal.
I mean, yeah, just probably like everyone else's. It was insane. I mean, he's got that in him. I mean, he has a good strike when he gets a hold of it, and it was just perfect. So I was really happy for him.
Germany's a top 10 team. What did this performance show of the quality of opponents you guys can compete with?
I mean, I hope it showed that. I mean, obviously a really good team, and we put on another good performance today. Obviously, the results didn't go our way in the end, but we created a lot of chances. And so are you out? All in all, really positive from us against a good team.
Record crowd here in Chicago. How does it feel to have that support as you leave for the West Coast and start the World Cup?
It's incredible. Again, Chicago today really showed out. And just to see all the fans showing up and getting excited around this moment is so big for us.
That was Christian Pulisic speaking to Sandy McAfee of U.S. Soccer. Let's hear from the man himself, who scored the goal for, I mean, if you have not seen it, please go find it and watch it over and over again. It is as clean of a volley as you could possibly find. Anthony Robinson, the left-sided wingback for the U.S. after his goal.
Through a lot the past couple of years, what did that goal and that moment mean to you?
So much. I mean, you know, being just being here in general and being with the team, it's something that I wasn't quite sure was going to happen the way my year's gone. So, to score a goal like that is an incredible feeling. And I think everyone can see and how I celebrated and the emotions that came out that, you know, it meant the world to me.
A win against Senegal, you go toe-to-toe with Germany. How would you define how the team is playing right now?
It's been good. There's been some good signs in the team, both games. I mean, we'd have loved to have won today. Obviously, it didn't pan out that way, but we said before both games that the win wasn't the most important thing. It was being competitive. It was showing, you know, our identity as a team and how we want to play. And I feel like we did that. We responded really well from conceding a bit of a sloppy goal straight away. And, you know, another day, I think a team with a bit less about them can just, you know, kind of crumble off that and not play. But we, you know, we fought back into the game, played well at times, and going into the first game against Paraguay, I think there's a lot of confidence in the team.
I like the fight back, as Anthony Robinson talked about there. I do worry about giving up a sloppy goal, and that's a valid concern right now when you talk about this U.S. team. I do want to get into one aspect of it before we not hear from Mauricio Pochettino, but talk a little bit about some of the things that he had to say. I want to get into the idea that some have put some shade on Matt Fries for not coming off of his line on that free kick. I think we have a very bad tendency at times when we talk about this U.S. men's national team to nitpick. I think we get caught up on the smallest of things and make them bigger than they actually are. I don't think there's very many goalkeepers in the world who are going to be brave enough in that moment to come off their line on a ball that's served up that well and get there and make the play. I think Fries gambled that he could stay back and react. Kai Havertz with a perfect header. The service was even better from Joshua Kimmich. And that's why the ball ends up in the back of the net. The marking where Havertz gets away from Miles Robinson, that's the issue. Do you wish that your goalkeeper could have not just come off his line there? Because this is the nitpicking that I get frustrated with, especially when we talk about goalkeepers. Do I wish that he could have come off his line and made the play? Absolutely, because then you somehow prevent that goal. But when we get hung up on the just coming off the line part, there's no guarantee that he gets there. I don't think he does, because I think the service is too good from Kimmich. I don't think he gets to it. There's just, I really don't think there's any way. And the distance of the free kick, he couldn't cheat on it and gamble too early, because then you leave the goal wide open. I don't think it's on Matt Freeze at all. I don't know who starts on Friday night in goal for the U.S., though. I think Matt Freeze has done enough to keep the number one spot, but does he have the number one spot? I don't know. And Maurizio Pochettino hasn't talked about it. He's not going to answer it unless he's asked directly, and he still might not answer it. He might find a way out of it, but I don't believe he's been asked about it. He hasn't brought it up willingly. We go back to the March window where we saw Matt Turner start game one and Matt Freeze start game two. In this window, Matt Turner started game one. Now, Chris Brady played in the second half of game one because he hadn't played for the national team yet. And you don't want a third goalkeeper who, if crazy things happen, you got to turn to. You don't want his debut to be in a World Cup. So he got minutes. All right. Freeze played the whole 90 here. Does that make him the number one? I think he is the number one. And I think he should hold on to that spot. I'm not 100% sure that he is the actual number one. Matt Turner does have the World Cup experience. We will find out. I think your biggest questions for the U.S. are goalkeeper, more importantly, center back with Chris Richards, and we'll be talking about his health all week long on Atlanta Soccer Tonight. All right, let's talk a little bit about what Mauricio Pochettino had to say in his post-game press conference. Generally pleased, called it an even game, and I would agree with him. I loved what he said about conceding the early goal. I mean, of course, he was mad about it at first, but he said that in a way, it's lucky for the team that that happened because it forced them to show their character and their resilience, and now they believe in it. He felt that response was amazing, very valuable preparation for real-time World Cup scenarios. Talked about Anthony Robinson and leaving the match. There was some concern on the broadcast about an injury. It was cramps, he said. He couldn't fully confirm the severity. The fact that Jedi spoke to the media afterwards makes you feel pretty good about him being okay. All the fluids you need, Anthony, between now and Friday. Also talked about Malik Tillman playing well, having not played a lot at the club level as of late. Played well in this one, and he played well in a couple different roles in the midfield, which is really good to see. The thing that was really interesting that he said was the answer to the last question, which was, I think, essentially trying to get at, you know, how far does Pochettino feel like this team is in their tactics? And what Pochettino talked about was sitting down with Dan Cathy of Chick-fil-A, who's one of the heavy donors for the U.S. soccer program right now, and was instrumental in getting the Arthur M. Blank U.S. Soccer National Training Center built because he had the land that it's built on. Dan Cathy said it wasn't his quote, and I've heard this from other people. It's paraphrased here to suit this scenario. I'm not sure who originated it. I need to do some research. But basically, the question was about strategy and tactics, and Pochettino cited the phrase, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And the idea is that he has been more focused on the more important element, which is building the team culture. And I think that was readily evident in our conversations with players, seeing training sessions. The culture in this team is really good. There was a moment on Thursday before they left for Chicago and this game. Early on in the training session, I think it was when they were just initially getting out on the field, and usually guys start knocking the ball around. They kind of create their own keep away games and whatever. And there was a moment on the field where a large group, and it was kind of on the other end, so I didn't get everybody identified. Brendan Aaronson was part of it. Weston McKennie was part of it. Christian Pulisic was part of it. I think Gio Reyna was part of it. And it was a group of about 10, 12, maybe 15 guys who all came together in a huddle. They all put their arms around each other. They were talking. Then they were laughing and joking. And you saw a lot of that in this pre-tournament camp in Fayetteville. And I would imagine you'll have a lot of that, maybe a little less as you're now in match week. But the vibes, the culture, the chemistry, extremely good with this group. I think from what we've seen in the matches that the tactics have been fine. I'm not worried about the tactics of this group. I'm not worried about the culture of this group. I'm worried about the delivery. I'm worried about the execution in the key moments against top teams. You don't face top teams in the group stage, but you face three teams that can beat you in Paraguay, in Turkey, in Australia. They are all capable of beating you. You will be favored in every game as the U.S. men's national team. It's going to be a journey over three games to see if the U.S. can get out of the group stage, where they finish coming out of the group stage, and what kind of matchup that sets up for the knockout round. We will be talking about all of it, but not just the United States. We'll be talking about everything in this tournament for the entirety of it here on Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Coming up next, we're going to get into goals. That's what we like to talk about, right? The attack. We're going to talk about that. Kind of look at who could be the big goal scorers in this tournament on a team and on an individual basis. That's all coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Into the back of the net! Goal!
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight
with Jason Longshore.
Just a few days away from the start of the World Cup. I feel like we've been waiting for this forever, and now it is starting on Thursday. Cannot wait to get this thing underway. But I'm Jason Longshore, Atlanta Soccer Tonight. I'll be back with you again tomorrow night at 10, and it'll be a little bit of a split show. The whole thing will be on YouTube, and the first hour of the show will be on the radio before we get into some stoppage time, and we'll take some questions and probably open some Panini sticker packs and see if I have any good luck. It's been fun doing that. I'm getting addicted to this. I'm still angry that Madison Cruz pulled a Lionel Messi card on her first pack, and I've opened, I don't know. I bought a 50 pack box. I don't know how many I've actually opened. I've been saving some so I could do it on the show. But I have opened at least 25 or 30 packs. No Lionel Messi. Only two U.S. players, Brendan Aaronson and Weston McKennie. Got Lamine Yamal. I've got some other good cards, but no Lionel Messi. Not many U.S. players. I'm kind of sad. We'll see if this will change. I'm getting my actual album book to start filling with stickers on Tuesday because they were a little hard to find there for a minute. I think a lot of stores are starting to get these back now. I saw a big stack at CVS the other day. So $2 a pack. Basically, between that, some of the jerseys that have come out, other World Cup things, you're getting shoes that are coming out. Argentina did a collection with the skateboard brand Thrasher. There's some stuff there that I'd like to get. Some of the U.S. stuff that is coming out is very cool. They're trying to take all my money. That's all I know. We'll talk more about that on the Intersection crossover on Thursday with Noel White. But let's get into what's on tap. And what's on tap is brought to you by our friends at Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26. The World Cup is on tap, but let's talk about the goals that we could have on tap for this tournament. We love talking about goals, right? When you look back at previous World Cups, I mean, I'm a sicko and I will look at different categories of countdowns and things from World Cups. That's just me. In general, what do you see more of? All the goals of World Cup 2018, all the goals of World Cup 1986, you get those sorts of things. You don't get many of the all the saves. You very rarely get all the tackles. I'd be all into that one. Give me all the crazy slide tackles. Give me all the great dribbles. All the goals. That's what we talk about when these tournaments are over. We remember World Cups by goals. Our showrunner this summer for Atlanta Soccer Tonight, Sophia Cupertino, asked the question of me, and I had to think about it for a minute. What was the best goal of the 2022 World Cup? A very underrated World Cup, by the way, and it was another one that coming into it, all we were talking about was the fact that it was being played in November and December, and it was being played in Qatar, and they had no real soccer history, and they'd never qualified for a World Cup before this, and all the negative things going into that tournament. And then by the end of it, we were talking about one of the best World Cups of all time, the best World Cup final of all time. And one of the goals in the tournament was in the final, the volley from Kylian Mbappe off of the header that came back to him. And he takes it out of the air from the top of the 18, which was completely unexpected. Kylian Mbappe's goal, that's one of the great goals of that tournament. Richarlison with the bicycle kick. That was a great goal. Lionel Messi's goal against Mexico, I think a little bit more for the meaning of it, because Argentina was teetering on getting knocked out in game number two. My goal of the tournament, it's kind of a weird one. Vincent Aboubakar, Cameroon versus Serbia, where he breaks through the defensive line, the goalkeeper's coming out on him, and it's not exactly a chip. He kind of scoops it. He kind of gets his right foot under it and flips the ball up over the goalkeeper and into the back of the net. That's my goal of the 2022 World Cup, because that's just insane to have the guts to take that goal and to try that. And he did it at a World Cup. The Kylian Mbappe goal, I have to probably say that it should have been the goal of the tournament. I think Richarlison actually won goal of the tournament in the voting. The Mbappe goal in the final, because it was a 1-2 where it's a big diagonal switch. Mbappe heads it down. I believe Colomwani puts it back into his path, and he's kind of falling away to volley it at the top of the 18 and tie the game in the last 10 minutes of that. So the Kylian Mbappe goal is probably the best one. My favorite was the Aboubakar one, because it's just crazy. Sophia asked me a question as well. Which player has the best chance of scoring a great goal in this tournament? And it's hard to define, because what do you think is a great goal? What kind of goals do you like the best? I like the goals that come off of longer dribbling runs, personally. Yes, I'm a Diego Maradona fan. That's probably part of this. But I like the goals that show that individual skill and where somebody beats a couple players on the dribble. Lamine Yamal is fully capable of that. I think Vinicius Jr., fully capable of that. Ryan Cherki, he's crazy. He's absolutely capable of it. Do you like a goal like Anthony Robinson's yesterday? A volley, or do you like the bicycle kick? Everybody loves a bicycle kick. The long range blast, a free kick like Luis Chavez in the last World Cup from way out. Those are great. I tend to go to the extended moment of individual brilliance. I think of some of the goals that Roberto Baggio scored in his World Cup history, both in 1990 and in 1994. I'm going to go with Lamine Yamal. I feel like he might have one of those goals that we remember forever in this tournament, because I think Spain's going to be very, very good. What team should have the most goals scored? I think France is definitely one when you look at that front line, if they stop fighting themselves. Kylian Mbappe, Ousmane Dembele, Ryan Cherki, all the talent. Olise, who I think it's easy to forget about with the other three guys, but Olise was brilliant for Bayern down the stretch. France has the most attacking firepower. Argentina has Lionel Messi, so they're always in this conversation. Brazil is Brazil, so they're always in this conversation. Rafinha could be one to really watch if he gets back on full form. We talked about Endrick earlier. Brazil is always one of these kinds of teams. Another question, and this was an interesting one, and I got to do some research on it. I'd love to get your takes on it if you're listening to this on the podcast edition, or you're listening to this live. You can always tweet at me at Longshoe, or find me on really any social media platform at Longshoe. Who is going to be the surprise goal scorer in this tournament? And probably the most famous one of this category would be Toto Schillaci, Salvatore Schillaci of the Italian national team in 1990, where he came out of nowhere. He was the spark plug off the bench initially and then got starts, and he was the golden boot winner in that tournament, and nobody expected it. And he didn't really have another great run in his career up to that level. It was just one magical summer for him. Roger Milla in that tournament for Cameroon was a spark plug off the bench. So I kind of think of it with Schillaci, like, who is going to be that bench player that is the unexpected, consistent spark for a team? I don't know who that's going to be across the tournament. I mean, you'd have to really start digging deep into some of the benches, start trying to figure out some of the starting lineups as well. I think Argentina is going to be interesting in terms of who doesn't start, because I would expect Lautaro Martinez starts. does Julian Alvarez and where and how does that work? Could somebody like a Giuliano Simeone be this player for the U.S.? Could a Ricardo Pepi be this player? And I could see that because I think Folair and Balogun is going to start. But could Pepi be that spark plug late? Could it be a situation where with five subs, this is very easy to do. Balogun plays 60, Pepi plays 30. I'd be fine with that. Pepi has shown he's ready to go. We haven't seen Haji Wright for really any extended period of time. I think it's Pepi and it's Balogun, and those are your two guys. And I think Balogun's the number one. But could Pepi be that guy that consistently delivers late in games? And I'll say it again, and I don't want to keep driving this point home, but I do think it's important in this tournament, and I think it's going to be a factor. You're going to have a lot of goals late because I think you're going to have a lot of tired legs late. If you have a player like a Ricardo Pepi that is comfortable being that guy off the bench, could Endrick be this guy for Brazil? Maybe there's not a spot for him to start. You're going to see goals late in games. And that means players who are coming off the bench are going to be able to take advantage of that. I think that's a very important factor in this tournament. Having depth, especially in the attack, to be able to change games late. Who will have the team that gives up the most goals in this tournament? There's a few contenders. Saudi Arabia. Qatar, I think, is in this conversation. Jordan is in this conversation. Teams that are new to the tournament. I think Cabo Verde will actually be competitive, and I think they're pretty decent defensively. The one that worries me the most in terms of being able to compete in this tournament is New Zealand. New Zealand, I don't think, has looked good in this turn in the build-up to the tournament, although they only lost 1-0 to England. New Zealand will be a problem. I don't think they're going to score very much, if at all, and I think they will struggle defensively. The one, and maybe it's because of the group, that I think will end up conceding the most goals is Iraq. I think Iraq's a pretty decent team, but they're in a group with France, Senegal, and Norway. Norway's got all kinds of attackers. France has got all kinds of attackers. Senegal's got all kinds of attackers. I think Iraq's going to give up a lot of goals. I feel bad for that team and how many goals they will have to pick up out of the back of the net. All right, coming up next, it is the 3-4-3. I got three local stories, I got four headlines, and I got three things that make me smile about this game that I love so much. Coming up after the break on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
And now we end the night with a bit of structure.
Shot, goal, goal, goal!
Let's get the formation set. It's the 3-4-3 on Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Final segment of the show, the 3-4-3. Y'all know how the show ends by now. We try to have a little bit of structure to see the night out. It's been kind of a chaotic one as we get ready for the World Cup. This one's an OG 3-4-3. You're going to get different kinds of 3-4-3s all summer long just because of the nature of doing a nightly 3-4-3. But tonight, it's OG style because there's a lot going on locally. So three local stories, four headlines from around the world, and three things that make me smile about this game that I love so much. Let's start on the local side of things. And let's start with Atlanta United 2. And oh yeah, by the way, the 3-4-3 is brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. Atlanta United 2, local story number one, a 3-0 win last night in Athens. I started the day in Gainesville. I actually started the day in Atlanta and then did the pre-U.S. men's national team show, Atlanta Soccer Tonight Today, from Nofo Bruco in Gainesville. It's all part of our celebration of Soccer Down Here Lager, which has been really exciting all weekend long. Did another show this afternoon at Nofo Cumming. But we were in Gainesville, watched the first half of the U.S. game with some great listeners, and then made my way to Athens, where for the SDH Network, called the Atlanta United 2 match. And it was a great one. It was absolutely worth the trip. 3-0 win, two goals in stoppage time. Arif Kovac is the big story. His 9th goal of the season. He is your golden boot leader in MLS Next Pro. But number two on the local side is one of the other stories of the night. You had an amazing performance. We had multiple amazing performances, but Two players making their first starts at the MLS Next Pro level, Amir Henry and Andrew Jardines. And Andrew was my man of the match. I thought he was the best player on the pitch in the first half. And Jose Silva said it. If he had 11 Andrews, he'd win the league. This was a player making his first start, and I had the chance to interview him afterwards, his first ever interview. He might have been more nervous about the interview than he was about the game, because he said, look, you know, it's my first start, but I feel like I had to make a first impression. But he wasn't overawed by the moment, and I really was impressed with his composure on the field. He won multiple big tackles. He was good on the ball. He got into goal-scoring opportunities. He was a complete midfielder. It's a really impressive performance. A really impressive interview, too, by the way. This is what I love about doing what I do with Atlanta United, getting a chance to see a player like Andrew Jardines, first with the Academy, then with Atlanta United, too, and getting the chance to interview these guys and give them that first taste of the next level, because he's a player who absolutely has an even higher level in him if he keeps developing in the way that he is. Andrew Jardines was the player of the game last night for Atlanta United, too, in a big 2-0 win that also saw Santiago Pita come back from injury and have a goal and two assists. All right, number three on the local side of things, the WPSL Southeast Division, really competitive. Teams are either 1, 2, 3, or 4 games played so far this season. It's a little chaotic scheduling-wise. Decatur FC are your defending champions from last year. They are on 4 points through 2 games. Level with the UFA Gunners. But it's the Georgia Impact who are leading the Southeast Division. They went on the road today and got a big 1-0 win in Chattanooga. They're a perfect 3 out of 3. They're on 9 points through 3 games. Second place is 4 points, but again, Decatur and UFA have only played 2 games. They have a game in hand. Great start for Georgia Impact. Really big win for them on the road today in Chattanooga. All right, let's get into the headlines. And number one, kind of headline you don't love to have to talk about. I started to see the notes on my social media come across when we were doing the show at NOFO Coming. And I thought it was actually things from a few years ago. I thought it might have been the same day that it had happened before. But Christian Eriksen today collapsed on the field during the Denmark-Ukraine match. It was abandoned in Odense, Denmark. Both sets of players formed a ring around him while medics worked on him. He was able to walk to the ambulance. The Danish Federation confirmed he was conscious. He's doing well under the circumstances. I believe he was listed as stable. His national team doctor, Morten Bosen, he said he was briefly unconscious but regained consciousness very quickly. His pacemaker device beating as it should. Further hospital examination is ongoing. He suffered a full cardiac arrest during Denmark's Euro 2020 match against Finland. This was in June of 2021. Remember, the tournament was postponed a year. He had to be resuscitated on the pitch that day. He was fitted with an implantable cardioverter defibrillator and returned to professional football just 8 months later. Played for Brentford. Now he plays with Wolfsburg. Denmark didn't qualify for the World Cup. Tonight, the only thing that matters is that Christian Eriksen was able to walk off the field under his own power and that his pacemaker is working. Everything else is secondary. Number two on the headlines, let's talk video games. Let's talk EA Sports FC and what their predictions were for this World Cup. They've just done their update. All the World Cup teams are in the game. You can play the whole tournament. They have run hundreds of simulations. This is what they do for big events. And their simulations have most frequently produced Spain as your champion, Lamine Yamal as your golden boot winner, Elliot Anderson as your top assister, but Spain winning the title. For the U.S. men's national team, EA simulations have most commonly had them go out in the round of 16, which is where I would have them as well. This is a team that's ranked number 16 in the world. They need to get to the round of 16. That would mean they win a knockout game in the round of 32, and that would be an accomplishment. In a significant number of runs, they made the quarterfinals. It is possible. It just depends on how the bracket falls for you. Malik Tillman was their most likely leading scorer, which was interesting. Christian Pulisic and Balogun next. Serginho Dest and Tim Ream picking up the most yellow cards. Okay. Brendan Aaronson somehow picking up the most red cards. Okay. Whatever. Nobody asked for that, but it's part of the record. Here's the thing. EA Sports FC, and previously it was FIFA EA Sports, do you trust them? Do you trust them to simulate this and be accurate? Do you trust a video game simulation that has happened to have been accurate the last four straight World Cups? Maybe you do. Maybe Spanish fans are very happy right now. Number three on the headlines, Florentino Perez has won the telenovela that has been Real Madrid's presidential election. The first contested vote in 20 years took place today. Perez won approximately 65% of the vote against the challenger Enrique Riquelme, a young businessman from Alicante, ran on a platform of transparency and restructuring and also signing Erling Haaland, which Manchester City did not care for hearing. Exit polls, yes, exit polls in the Real Madrid presidential election across three major Spanish outlets all showed Perez in the 64 to 66% range. Polls opened at 9 a.m. I do not know how many different polling sites there were. I know there are a lot of members for Real Madrid, but I did not expect exit polls. This is the first contested election since 2006. Perez has been president continuously since 2009, unopposed in five straight elections. He called for this one himself, looking for a renewed mandate after two seasons without a major trophy after Kylian Mbappe arrived. Just saying, those are two factual things. They might not be linked, but they are both factually correct. Florentino Perez, he gave a speech near the stadium, and he said that the election, quote, has shown an example of democracy to the world. Okay. He also had already announced Jose Mourinho as coach if he won. He has announced that he will sign Ibrahima Konate and Denzel Dumfries. Got to get those done. And he has promised to spend over 150 million euro on an unnamed Galactico forward this week. The World Cup begins on Thursday. Real Madrid's about to spend more money than most national GDPs. And I don't know who they're planning on signing, because if he's playing in the World Cup, he might be busy at the moment and not be negotiating. We'll see, I guess. You know, people in politics, presidents making promises and not delivering on them. That's nothing new. That doesn't happen, right? Florentino Perez, what are you doing? It's chaos. It's welcome to Real Madrid. Number four, Brighton. They have rejected Tottenham Hotspur's second bid for Jan-Paul van Hekke. The CEO of Brighton, Paul Barber, he confirmed today on TalkSport that they have turned down two separate Tottenham Hotspur bids for 25-year-old Dutch center back Jan-Paul van Hekke. Brighton are reportedly valuing him at around £50 million. Van Hekke enters the final year of his contract this summer. Roberto De Zerbi, who was previously at Brighton, has managed him. He likes him. He wants to bring him in. Tottenham Hotspur barely survived relegation this season. They survived on the final day with a win over Everton. They have brought in Andy Robertson. They have brought in Marco Sensei on free transfers. Chelsea and Manchester City are also reported to have interest in Van Hekke. Three things that made me smile over the last few days or so in the world of soccer. Curaçao, they arrived at their pre-World Cup training camp in Curaçao. In a school bus with no windows, singing. Every player hanging out the sides, they're singing at full volume. Fans line the streets to greet them. This is a country of 150,000 people. This is their first World Cup. They arrived in a school bus. So cool. Like, so cool. Like, they'll be coming to their national team base camp, and that's happening soon. And I don't know if they'll get a school bus that is painted in their national flag colors, but I hope they do, because that's really cool. Really cool video. Highly, highly recommended. All right. For our international listeners, you might want to stop here. And I know we have some, and thank you for listening. It's much appreciated. But I might make you upset, because I'm going to be I don't want to say stereotypical, but I am going to embrace a few things that are not of the normal soccer world and happened at the U.S.-Germany match. And it upset some people. And I might upset you, and I apologize in advance if I do, but this is how I feel. Number one of those, number two on the things that make me smile, of three, Anthony Robinson's great goal on the PA at Soldier Field, you could hear Freebird by Lynyrd Skynyrd. That was a little unexpected. That became a song that was associated with Team USA and the gold medal hockey run. It was really cool. Like, it's just different. We're used to hearing songs after goals. I mean, we hear them in MLS. We hear them in other places in the world, too. Like, that, to me, should not be that big of a deal. People were complaining about it. I thought it was cool. I'm all for it. You know, I love the combination of music and soccer, so I loved it. I thought it was very cool. It made me smile. The second thing that made me smile was the whole intro process. Now, remember, look, this is the final game for the U.S. before a home World Cup. This was the send-off game. This was the celebration game. So the pregame introductions were big and boisterous. You had the Chicago Bulls PA announcer doing the famous Chicago Bulls-style introductions. It was big. It was over the top. It was loud. Ooh, some people got upset. Some people calling it, oh, it's WWE style. It's WrestleMania style. Oh, this is, there's no place for this in our game. Like, stop. Like, can we stop that? Seriously? Like, it's absurd that people would act this way about it. It's absurd that people want to celebrate and claim and take and borrow from U.S. culture in music, in movies, in TV, in art, fashion, so many different things. People want to do that. But then in the soccer space, if you do something that's a little different and maybe like U.S. sports, oh, that's terrible, and there's no place for it in our game. It's our game too. It's not purely your game. It's not anybody's game. It's everybody's game. And everybody interprets it differently. And that's a great thing about it. Have fun. It was fun. It was a big moment. It meant something in Chicago to have this. This is Chicago sports in a nutshell. The national anthem was very Chicago sports. Legendary anthem singer doing it in a legendary way. Again, big, boisterous, celebratory, loved it. My message to fans around the world, you can have fun, guys. It is okay. I would love for our European listeners to not just look at what the U.S. does in these kinds of scenarios, but look at what happens in Central America. Look at what happens in South America. Look at what happens in other parts of the world. And understand that we can all have our things that we enjoy and have our own interpretations of the game and what we love about it and what we enjoy about it. Don't be offended, please, by pre-match introductions and say that it has no place in the game. It did, and it was fun. And I think it's a moment that a lot of people will remember. And should it happen all the time? I don't care. If it does, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. You're going to see different introductions for players this season this year for the World Cup. It's not going to be like the Club World Cup, which again upset a lot of people because players were introduced individually and they came out onto the field. But it is going to be a different setup. I guarantee you there will be a lot of people, probably from countries in Europe, that complain about it. Probably some in other parts of the world too. I don't want to just say Europe, but it seems like a lot of this comes from that continent. Just ignore it. Maybe hit the mute button and just enjoy something different and a different kind of celebration to get a match started. That's what this was on Saturday in Soldier Field. I loved it. I thought it was great. Great job by everybody involved. I would say I'm sorry if it upset you, but don't be upset so easily. Just enjoy. Just smile and nod. And if it's not for you, it's not for you. But don't say it's not for everybody. Just say you didn't enjoy it. You don't even really have to say that. You could just not enjoy it. Not everybody needed to know that you didn't enjoy it, but you don't get to judge what other people enjoy. And that's what I love about this game, is that you get different styles, you get different systems, you get different pre-match ceremonies, post-match ceremonies, all these different things, because everybody interprets it in their way. And that's what's great about it. There are things that you enjoy. There are things you might not like. There are things that you would do differently. Cool. But that's why this is the world's game. We all have different ways of enjoying it. So hopefully you can find ways that you enjoy it this summer. We will definitely here on AST. We will enjoy all of it all summer long as we get ready for this great celebration that starts on Thursday in Mexico City. Mexico and South Africa to kick the tournament off at 3:00. Friday, the U.S. and Paraguay. We will be all over it all week long on Atlanta Soccer Tonight starting at 10:00 tomorrow night. We're in match week. For the U.S. men's national team, we're in match week for the World Cup. Y'all have a good rest of the night. Adios, everybody.